Today on the John Ankerberg Show, recent surveys show people are confused about what they believe about Jesus Christ. They think he was a great man, but are not sure about what he taught, who he claimed to be, and the purpose of his life. Through the years, I've spoken to students on university campuses, to people in large gatherings, to conferences and churches, about the facts and evidence that can lead a person from skepticism to belief in Jesus Christ. Today, let's examine together the evidence that can lead to a clear understanding of who Jesus is, resolve your doubts and answer your questions, and possibly lead you to faith in Him. I invite you to join me for this special edition of the John Ankerberg Show. Welcome to our program. I'm glad that you joined me. For the next few weeks, I want to start at the beginning and take you step by step through the facts and evidence that can lead you to belief in Jesus Christ. When I'm on the university campus, I realize I must begin by addressing the question of those who are skeptics. So in today's program, I'll begin by talking to the atheist who claims there is no God. Then, what can you say to the person who claims to be an agnostic? And then we're going to define terms of what Christianity is and what it is not. We're going to examine the 9 authors who wrote about Jesus and ask the question, how do we know they gave us accurate historical information about him? Then, do you know what 99% of our American universities teach students about Jesus? Are they being told the truth? Well, hopefully along the way, you'll realize the value of this information to you personally. Let's begin. Today I'm going to take you to Vail, Colorado, where I was presenting this information to people at the Dobson Arena. When you're talking to friends and you want to introduce Jesus to them, especially on campus, I've had the privilege of speaking on 78 university campuses to straight pagan crowds bigger than this. The first thing that people would say is, I don't need to listen to your stuff about religion because I'm an atheist. If a friend says to you, hey, you know, I don't care about your Jesus, I'm an atheist. What do you say to that person? What's your answer? Here's how I would advise you, okay? What you want to do is just get them to be open to listening to your evidence. And I usually say something like this. Well, if you're an atheist, prove it to me. And the guy says, well, let's see. What would I need in information to prove to you that there is no God? Do you know what you would need? You would need to have all knowledge. You would have had to search every corner of the universe to make sure that God was not there. And you know right now that we're very limited. You don't even know what the person behind you is thinking or what they're talking about. They might be looking at your hairdo or whatever. The fact is, you don't know what they're saying. And if we don't know what's going on in the back of this room, what about London or Hong Kong right now or in Chicago? We don't have that information. We're not there. We're limited in time and space to right here. And what if God's not just bound to this planet? What if he's out there someplace else? Our space guys showed us that even traveling 22,000 miles per second, you can't get out of our galaxy in a lifetime. That is, if you were around the sun, starting point, and you were born, and you got into a spaceship that was going 22,000 miles per second, by the time you were 75 years of age, you wouldn't be outside of our galaxy. And then scientists say that out there beyond our galaxy, there are billions and billions of other galaxies in this thing called the universe. And if we don't know what's going on in this room, and if we don't know if God's in Hong Kong, and if we don't know if God's hiding behind some planet in our own galaxy, how in the world can you say that God might not be out there in the universe? You cannot say as a fact that there is no God, and there, most of the intellectuals will never say that. It's your village atheists that say that. Your village atheists do not know enough to realize that they cannot say there is no God. But I would say to your friend, look, would you admit that you don't have all knowledge, that there's the possibility that God's out there? He'd have to say that if he's honest. So then on campus, after you get past that point, the next person that comes along says, but listen, I still don't need to listen to you because I'm an agnostic. I'm an agnostic. Now, I have found that there are 2 kinds of agnostics.
By the way, what is an agnostic? An agnostic is a fella that is brilliant in the area of not knowing anything. Thomas Huxley coined the term, and it basically means you don't know. That's what you're saying. And I love it. We're on university campuses, and here's this guy that's got a poster up and says, turn out and hear this agnostic. You turn out and hear this guy talk about what he doesn't know. Now, as I said, there are two kinds of agnostics that I've met every place that I've traveled. First of all, there is the ordinary agnostic. The ordinary agnostic is the fellow that says, listen, John, I don't know if there is a God, but I'll tell you what, if you've got some evidence, I'm open. I'm willing to listen. Man, I love that kind of a person. If you're an agnostic here today and you're open to listening to the evidence, you have come to the right place. You have come to the right place. But then there's the second kind of agnostic, who is what I call the ornery agnostic. The ornery agnostic is the fellow that says, I don't know if there's a God or not, but I know that you don't know. And I say, how do you know I don't know? And he says, I know. Now that is what I call a real ornery agnostic. Now I've gotten a little story up for these fellows that have usually said that no matter what Ankerberg you show me, my mind is already made up. I love that, you know? You can put all the evidence right on the table. The guy says, I'm not going to look at that. For those kind of people, I said, you know what you remind me? You remind me of the guy who thought he was dead. The guy says, what do you mean? I said, didn't you ever hear the story about the fellow that thought he was dead? No, tell me about it. I said, glad you asked. There was this fellow that went around telling people, he says, my name is, and he gave him his name, and he says, by the way, I'm dead. And of course, that was a little embarrassing to his parents. And so they thought, we need to take him to a psychiatrist. And so they finally got him to go to the psychiatrist. Before the boy went in, they said, Doc, look, we got a problem. Our boy, he's alive, but he thinks he's dead. He's going around telling everybody he's dead. The doctor says, well, let's bring him in. So they brought the kid in. Kid says, hey, Doc, glad to meet you. My name is, and by the way, do you know I'm dead? Doctor said, I see what the problem is. This fella had the belief that he was dead. It was a false belief. Now he thought, I need to show him some fact from the real world that will bust this belief that he's dead. So I thought, what could I show him? He thought, I know, I'll show him the fact that dead men do not bleed. They don't, you know. So he gave him all kinds of textbooks and all kinds of reports and all kinds of things, took him down to the morgue, cut dead bodies, showed him they do not bleed. And after months and months of research, this fellow finally came to the conclusion. He says, Doctor, you have persuaded me. Dead men do not bleed. Doctor thought, I've got him. He says, give me your hand. Kid put out the hand. He says, give me that finger. So he took the finger, took one of those little needle things that pricked the finger. The blood spurted out. The doctor thought, I've got him. This will burst his belief. But no, the kid came back and says, doctor, dead men bleed after all. Now that reminds me of the ornery agnostic, is that whatever you show them, they're going to jam it into their worldview. They're really not going to look at the evidence. Their minds are closed. They're silly. Hopefully you're not an ornery agnostic, you're an ordinary agnostic who would say, I'm open to the evidence. So what is the evidence? What is our case? What are we presenting? What is Christianity? Well, let's start off with a quick definition. Christianity is not this. It is not a system of ethics, although it encompasses that. It is not a philosophy and a worldview, although it certainly encompasses that. Christianity is totally based on a person, a real person that lived in history. He did certain things. He said certain things. And if he didn't do those things, if he didn't say those things, then Christianity is a fake. The one person that Christianity is based on is Jesus Christ, a real historical person. And actually, Christianity is not only based on him, but it's actually a relationship with Jesus Christ. Now, when you say that it's based on a person in history that lived, this gets us out of this fairy tale realm and it gets us into the world of factual data. For example, we have evidence about Jesus Christ that is similar to evidence about other people. Let me ask you a question and see if I can get this across to you. How many of you here believe that Abraham Lincoln was the president of the United States at one time? Put your hand up. Well, great. How many of you have met Lincoln personally? Put your hand up. I was at the University of Chicago speaking, and three guys in the back row put their hand up. And I was a little nervous about that until I realized they were not sitting on chairs. They were in old coats, and they had smoke going up through their collar. They were smoking something back there, so I understand how they met Lincoln. But most of us would say we have not met Lincoln personally, but you still said that he was the president of the United States. Well, how in the world did you know that he was the president of the United States if you've never met him personally? Well, one day you were awake in history class, and you can remember vaguely that there was somebody, the teacher was saying, there was somebody that saw what Lincoln did. There were other guys that wrote down some of his speeches, and this which was seen, that which was heard, both pro and con, came down to us as historical records that tells us that Abraham Lincoln was the president of the United States. He was shot in Ford's Theater. He didn't slip on a banana peel in Peoria and die. We know these things from historical information. And going on back, you find other people, such as Charlemagne. You remember Charlemagne? Charlemagne. And before him, you go back, there was Julius Caesar. And right about the time of Julius Caesar, there was somebody else that actually lived in real history by the name of Jesus Christ. If you go to the Encyclopedia Britannica, you will find 20,000 words listed to the person of Jesus Christ without a hint that he didn't exist. Why? Because those guys at the University of Chicago are such warm-hearted Christians. They just wanted to load up the encyclopedia on Jesus Christ. They wanted to give him more space than anybody else in the encyclopedia of world history. Come on. Anybody that has ever written a history of the first 100 years AD, whether they be a Buddhist, Muslim, Hindu, atheist, agnostic, believer, has put Jesus Christ in there. Why? Because he was a real historical person. How do we know that? We have eyewitness historical reports about Jesus. Did you know that there were 8 people that either said that they were eyewitnesses of Jesus' life or claimed to have contact with the eyewitnesses of Jesus? Did you know that? Who were they, by the way? A little louder. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, not Acts, Paul. Oh, you guys are sharp, I'll tell you. James, Peter, possibly writer of Hebrews if it wasn't Paul. You have Jude saying some things. All of these people either claimed to be eyewitnesses of Jesus' life or had contact with the eyewitnesses. But as soon as you say that, now I want to introduce you to some of the things that... How many of you got kids? Put your hand up. Okay, different stages of age and so on. But most parents tell me, John, we raised our daughter, our son, in our home, took them to church every Sunday, all through grade school, all through high school, and then we sent them away to college and we lost them to some ungodly professor. Now, I want you to know why you lost them. And I want you to know what to say. But let me read to you a quote that is the standard fare at 99 9/10 of the universities in this country. The standard line that is given to your son, to your daughter, when the professor talks to them about Jesus Christ and the historical material that we're going to talk about today.
Now let's return to Vail, Colorado, and the Dobson Arena, where I was explaining what 99% of our American universities are teaching students about Jesus.
This is an actual quote taken from a professor, Dr. Avram Stroll, at the University of British Columbia. This quote was picked up by such magazines as U.S. News and World Report. About twice a year, Time and U.S. News and World Report come out with stuff like this, right? Who's on the cover? Our Lord, okay? What's the title that's on U.S. News World Report? Who was Jesus? You read the article, what's the answer? They don't know. That's where it's at. Now, why is it that they don't know? Here's a quote. Abram Stroll, British Columbia University, made this. Jesus probably did exist. But so many legends have grown up about him that it's impossible for scholars to find out anything about the real man. The Gospels of St. Matthew, St. Mark, St. Luke, and St. John were written long after Jesus was crucified. They provide no reliable historical information about him. It is almost impossible to derive historical facts from the legends and descriptions of miracles performed by Jesus. That is what your son and your daughter will hear at 99 9/10 of the universities in this country. That is the standard line. Now, let me see if I could be a secular professor and trip you up here. You're a Christian, right? You're telling me about Jesus? Answer this question. Look, you've all been to a party where you had this little game that you whisper something into the person's ear, sentence, maybe a paragraph, or even a word. And the fact is it goes from this gentleman to the lady next to him and then all the way around. And if we did this and we came down, then we said, okay, fellas, stand up in the back there and tell us what that sentence was. You folks tell me what has happened to the sentence. What happened to it? Completely distorted. It's not even close up here to what was back there. All right? I am a secularist. Okay, I'm coming to you. You're the Christian now. You're supposed to give me the answer. Here's my question. Jesus lived, taught, did his thing over here. I got no problem with that. Jesus really did live. Okay? He lived. But then what he said was seen and heard by people that were standing around him, that they passed it on orally, word of mouth. They just said, hey, this is what Jesus did. And it went down through the years, and as Rudolf Bultmann has already said, 200 years later, that which had been circulating through the church orally, which was sincere, all of you were sincere, we have no problem with that, you really believed in Jesus. But by the time it got back there, some of you had deleted some things about the story and some things had been added. And our problem is that which is over here, we have no way of finding out if it matches what happened up here. What we have is the faith of the church, that which people sincerely believe, but we have no way of tracking it down. These people were removed from Jesus by the time it was written down. And just like at your party, the fact is we have no way of finding out, did that really happen? Therefore, we have the Jesus seminar taking votes. Did this really happen? I don't think so. Now, what would you say to those people? That's what Abram Stroll is saying. That's what the critics and that's what the professors are saying is the case to all of your kids when you send them to school. What do you say? Well, if in fact that's how it happened, we're in big, deep trouble. I agree. Big, deep trouble. What about if we change that story one little bit, though? I like to do this to professors. If I went to you as a professor and I whispered one sentence into your ear and then said, Professor, would you stand up and say it, please? You think we have a shot at getting it right? Yeah. Yeah. They've actually done tests on it. 99 9/10 of the time, those people have it absolutely word for word in paragraph form, just the way it was given to them. The question is, what do we have? Did this historical information come down from people that were right on the scene that were eyewitnesses, or like Bultmann and some of the others have said, and Abram Stroll, hey, this came down hundreds of years after the time of Jesus, and it's really legend and myth. We really don't know what they have to say. Turn over to Luke chapter 1, and here's where the Bible's going to come in, and let me just preface how I'm going to use this. When I use it with a secular crowd, I say it is a book. I am not going to argue as if this book dropped out of heaven, it's inspired and inerrant. I believe that it is, but I'm not arguing that way. All I want to find out is, do we have accurate information in this book about Jesus? There's a lot of other writers that write. They don't claim inerrancy. They don't claim inspiration from God, and we believe what they say. We bring people into court of law all the time. We say, did you see the guy pick up the gun and shoot the person? If the guy says yes and he's a credible witness, the guy goes to the chair. I only want to find out, do we have accurate information? Now, the scholars today say, look, this is how it happened at the party. The fact is it was word of mouth, it was only oral, and it was written down 200 years later. Now, Aristotle says when every time you open up a historical document, you'll always give the benefit of the doubt to the guy that wrote it. So giving the benefit of the doubt intellectually, we got to do that. Giving the intellectual benefit of the doubt to the writer, I want to first of all say what they claimed. Did they claim to be 200 years removed? Or did they claim to be, boom, eyewitnesses that saw it, stood up and told it? Well, let's take a look and see. Take a look at Luke chapter 1. Luke says this. He answers the question right off the bat. Many, underline the word many. It's all in every one of your versions there. For as much as many in King James and the others, many. Many have undertaken to do what? To draw up an account. To draw up an account. The critics today say it was oral. It was only delivered word of mouth and it wasn't written down until 200 years later. Luke says, that's wrong. He says, by the time he got there, many had undertaken to draw up an account. What's drawing up an account? It's a historical narrative. It's a written account. Of what? Of the things that have been fulfilled among us, namely Jesus' life. In other words, Luke is saying right off the bat, look, when I came along, there were other people that were eyewitnesses that had seen Jesus, and even before I got a chance to write, they had written an account of what had transpired when they had been with Jesus. Many, he says, I don't know how many many is, but it's more than one. Many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled among us, just as they were handed down to us by those who from the first were what? Eyewitnesses. So he says, the guys that wrote these accounts were just like the eyewitnesses who have given us other accounts. They are claiming they were right on the scene. But I want you to look at something, what Luke says. Therefore, since I myself have carefully investigated everything. King James says, has had perfect understanding. Perfect understanding is really carefully investigated everything. It's exactly what you do in a term paper. You get all the documents in front of you, you check them all out, you sift the evidence, then you write your thesis. Luke says, look, they claimed to be eyewitnesses. They claimed, and they put it into writing, that Jesus did this and that. He's saying he didn't just accept that. He says, I carefully investigated everything from the beginning. Now, how did he do that? He was the traveling companion of the Apostle Paul. And he had access to the other apostles. I'm sure that he would have all these different written documents in front of him about Jesus' life. And he would come over to Peter and say, hey, now, Peter, all these guys were saying at such and such a time, and you were there. Is this right? In other words, he's saying, I checked it out. I checked it out. Therefore, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, I like that word beginning, just an aside here. What's the only gospel that talks about Jesus' birth? Luke. That's where the Christmas story is at. When he said that he checked it out from the beginning, he wasn't kidding. It seemed good also to me to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, probably a governor, so that you may know the certainty of the things that you have been taught. That's why Luke says he wrote his deal, his gospel. Why? He wanted him to be certain of the facts. He says, I had eyewitness testimony. I was basing it on that, but I just didn't accept it willy-nilly. I checked it out carefully. I investigated all of it before I wrote it down. So he's saying, I had contact with the eyewitnesses, and I checked their reports. That's the kind of information I'm giving you in the book of Luke.
For additional resources, log on to jashow.org. That's jashow.org.